Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, celebrating 30 years as local hearing healthcare professionals. With a practice featuring 5 doctors of audiology, including 2 who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Some frontline workers in this coronavirus pandemic are people you never see. You may hear from them. Health experts say contact tracers are crucial to containing the spread of COVID-19, but only if the public cooperates. In part 2 of WGLT's series on contact tracing, Eric Stock reports contact tracers get public feedback that sometimes gets personal and sometimes political.
After Ava Roper of Bloomington got her public health degree from the University of Illinois in May, she wanted to put it to good use. She saw the McLean County Health Department needed contact tracers, those who get information from those who have tested positive for the coronavirus so they can call those who may have come in contact with them so they can get tested in quarantine. Roper joined the staff with more than a dozen others and had to learn on the fly.
I would say it's been hectic because we kind of just all started. We were all kind of thrown into this. I mean, one of the things about COVID is that, you know, we're still learning. Everyone's still learning. The CDC is still learning.
Roper now trains new contact tracers. So does Gaynette Hoskins of Bloomington. Hoskins now handles case investigations. Those calls are more probing because they need more detailed information.
You have to be a little bit more in their, like, in their business. Who were you around? Think back on this day. Like, what was going on? Do you remember if you went outside? Was there someone in the store with you?
Many people don't want to give their personal information over the phone to a stranger. Linnell Greenberg of Normal works in the health department's communicable disease clinic. Since COVID, she's become a full-time contact tracer. Greenberg says she's learned it helps if you can quickly connect with that stranger to build trust.
Either as a mom or someone who works full-time or someone who lives in this community who might have used their services in the past, I try and break that wall down very quickly so that I can get them talking with me and understanding that we're here to serve them.
Sometimes even that doesn't work. They often hang up or give out wrong information because they don't want the health department bothering them or they have financial concerns. Stacy Hirsch of Tawanda is a health department nurse who has been doing contact tracing for a year and a half. Hirsch says sometimes the resistance comes from business owners who are afraid they may have to take workers off the job or temporarily close because of a potential COVID exposure.
If they're forthcoming, they'll give us all those contact people. It's just their employers not wanting to necessarily have their staff forced to quarantine. That could be the issue. So we get a lot of slack, and we have a lot of people who aren't very happy with us.
Gaynette Hoskins says there's another segment of the population that may not be forthcoming. She says she has to reassure immigrants their personal information won't somehow be used to deport them.
Because they are concerned, like, what does this mean moving forward, things to that nature. And I just want to know, like, I honestly just want you all to be safe.
Some of the pushback contact tracers get is from COVID skeptics. Linnell Greenberg says she never gets anywhere with them.
We see this as a medical issue and as a community issue, but unfortunately politics, because of the election year, has really entered into this. And so I have had pushback where someone will flat out tell me that this is a hoax. They're not taking my call and they think it's a joke.
Melissa Graven oversees the contact tracing program for the McLean County Health Department. She says compliance has gotten worse since the pandemic began.
There is a portion of the community that has an inherent distrust in government. So that's why allaying those fears and building a quick connection is such a valid and important skill to have as a contact tracer.
That can be tough to do when people get verbally abusive. Stacy Hirsch has fielded those calls too. She says she tries to not take it personally.
I try not to when I'm on the phone with them. I maintain professionalism, but after the phone call, I've cried many, many times, and I'm not ashamed to say it.
Yeah, it is difficult work.
It is.
The job has become more difficult because a sharp rise in new cases in recent months created a backlog before the health department hired more contact tracers. Hirsch says it's been overwhelming.
I would be not ever leaving my desk. I felt like I was, like, trapped to my computer and to my phone. and I wasn't taking lunches, I wasn't taking breaks, I just was on the phone from the time I got here until the time I left.
Hirsch says because of the backlog, the department has had to prioritize cases involving nursing homes and schools. Others can be delayed for days. The health department has said if you test positive, don't wait for a call from the health department. Start your quarantine immediately. And you can't test your way out of quarantine. Ava Roper says that's the most common misconception she hears from the public.
If you test negative, that you are good to go and that your exposure is not going to lead to a positive result. We always want to emphasize to them that they still need to quarantine for 14 days because even if they have a negative result on day 5, on day 8, they could still become positive.
Despite the hostility and avoidance they encounter when trying to do their job, contact tracers say they know they are making a difference. Linnell Greenberg says the coronavirus is especially hard for older people who have to isolate. She's made multiple follow-up calls to a woman who is stuck in quarantine at home and can't see her husband, who is in the hospital with COVID.
Making a connection with someone who is really isolated and an older member of our community, and she knows that someone cares, that's my paycheck. That's it right there.
Greenberg says she's concerned more people act as though life has returned to normal. Cases like this remind us it hasn't. I'm Eric Stock.
The McLean County Health Department has hired about 24 additional contact tracers, and more will come on board soon. Tomorrow on Sound Ideas, hear an example of how the government's response to the pandemic was a big help to local officials.
And thanks for choosing WGLT for our award-winning news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm Melissa Leibert with RC McBride during our fall fund drive. We're asking everyone who can contribute to do so right now at WGLT.org.
Every day, the WGLT newsroom brings you the stories that help you understand the day's news, the latest developments on COVID-19, the 2020 election, and much, much more. So many have told us the WGLT has been a lifeline in this pandemic and as we all prepare to vote. Your contribution helps pay for Sound Ideas, the Leadoff podcast, and a local newsroom of award-winning journalists. And remember this, there's never a subscription fee to listen to or read our stories.
That's right. Everyone can access this essential public service thanks to awesome community support. You get something of value from us. That's why you're listening, and that's why you depend on Sound Ideas. It's time for you to put something back in during this fall fund drive so we can meet our goals. Please contribute now at WGLT.org.
What you can't see as a listener of WGLT is what it takes to bring you the news. As our community grapples with COVID-19 and the 2020 election, our reporting team is gathering the facts, asking the questions you want asked, checking and rechecking to make sure the information we're reporting is accurate.
Our journalists are hard at work every day gathering news in Central Illinois. Your support right now is critical to keep WGLT on the beat. Give now in whatever amount you can afford at WGLT.org. As you probably can guess, the pandemic has created financial challenges for Central Illinois businesses and organizations. That's a critical source of revenue for WGLT. And we have to double down on our efforts to stabilize and grow our corporate support and our individual giving revenue. Plus, look for alternate revenue streams. So we need your help today, right now, to reach our goal. Please contribute so we can stay on the beat. And you can listen to your favorite programs like Sound Ideas all fall and winter. Give now at WGLT.org and thanks.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Illinois State University has begun the search for a new athletics director. Larry Lyons says he plans to retire at the end of the year. Lyons tells Eric Stock he wanted to make the announcement last spring before COVID hit. He says there are advantages to leaving now.
I think it's probably not a bad time to do it. I think it's when you look at a typical athletic cycle, you know, usually you look at it's a year. You know, you have fall, winter, spring, you have summer. It's a little bit different in terms of what you deal with. The new athletic director is going to get to see all 19 sports in a 4.5 month period to get a real handle on where the sports are at. Get to see a really good sample of how well our events are run. under some real significant pressure of having all the 19 sports in a very short period of time. And the other thing that's important, particularly from the cycle perspective, is the new athletic director will be involved in the budget cycle.
So you came to ISU at a time when Redbird Arena was still under construction. Mm-hmm. It had some renovations just a few years ago. Hancock Stadium underwent a major facelift about 5 years ago. Duffy Bass Field, the baseball facility, got a major renovation during your time as athletic director. Are the facilities in better shape now on campus than when you started?
Well, I think that's always a goal, whether you look at a campus or an athletic department. Over that period of time, that you would certainly make some facility improvements. So, yeah, I believe so.
And college athletics is a much different world now than it was when you started in the 1980s. It seems to be much more of a business. What advice do you have for your successor as they take the reins and take it into the next era of college athletics?
I think the best thing that a new person can do is come in and learn what the culture of this place is, not just athletics, but the campus. The culture of the community and the alumni and the donors. I think that's very important. And when you have a real good feeling for the pulse of a place, you can make good decisions for the benefit of the program. You know, the AD is going to be part of the cabinet and part of the bigger picture on the campus too, and needs to be a good teammate in those decisions as well. So I think that's something that's going to be really important. Secondly, you know, we all know that athletics is driven by revenues and how you control your expenses, and you know that'll be a thing that. And getting that person's arms around the revenue streams, hopefully improving the revenue streams and then making sure that they understand the expenses and how that all fits together.
That's ISU Athletics Director Larry Lyons with Eric Stock. Tomorrow in Sound Ideas, Lyons talks about the progress he's seen from the racial justice movement that student athletes took up after his All Redbird Lives Matter comment. You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media, WGLT. Today we hear from a domestic violence survivor who tells her story in a new book of essays. Sarah Kaysbeer is a writer who grew up in Bloomington. The book is A Woman, A Plan, and An Outline of a Man. It explores Kaysbeer's process of navigating trauma. In one essay, The Edge of 17, Kaysbeer tells of the nearly two decades it took to come to terms with her domestic abuse. In this interview with correspondent Sarah Nardi, Kaysbeer shares what finally compelled her to speak out.
One evening, I was talking to two other women who I barely knew, and somehow this topic came up of past abusive relationships, violent ones, and I thought to myself, wow, what are the odds that here I'd be with two other women and all three of us would have stories? There are so many people who are carrying these stories and not talking about them. It's really just, it blew my mind.
Your own relationship took place when you were a teenager, which some might find surprising, but teen dating violence is actually very common. A CDC survey found that 1 in 11 female high school students reported experiencing violence in the last year. You write that when you met your then boyfriend, you didn't seem to fit in anywhere. A sense of belonging, especially in adolescence when there's a kind of safety in categorizing yourself a certain way, is very important. You didn't have that. Do you think that made you more vulnerable?
I was vulnerable in the sense that, yeah, I had, you know, low self-esteem like a lot of people in high school do. And I do think that people who are manipulative and have a tendency toward abuse, because it's often a pattern, can pick up on that. And I think they can exploit it. And I do think to a certain extent that that is what my boyfriend at the time did. He was very sweet, very nice to me most of the time. But there was a certain volatility that I didn't recognize as a sign that it could escalate.
But it did escalate and eventually culminated into physical violence, which would be terrifying and confusing for anyone, but especially for a 17-year-old girl. One of the most difficult lines in the essay for me is when you write that after he assaulted you, you didn't feel like the victim of an assault. You felt like the victim of a particularly brutal dumping. Can you talk about that?
I think it's just that I didn't have a container, a way to classify that kind of event. And we were already kind of breaking up, but this was just like, I knew that that was the end for us, of course, but this was just like a really brutal way to say goodbye to someone. And I think that it was that goodbye that as a teenager felt like she was in love with this person or had been with him for a while or was attached, suddenly to not be attached, to realize that's gone forever. That was the feeling that resonated with me most at that time.
So your then boyfriend was arrested and prosecuted for domestic battery, and you largely tried to forget about what happened. But nearly 20 years later, you realized that you felt unresolved, and you wrote to the McLean County State's Attorney asking for the documents pertaining to your case. What was it like reading through those?
They did really trigger some imagery that I had just been locked away inside me. One of the pieces that I remembered after reading them was that he shook me. He shook me before he hit me. And that part was actually the most scary because I was sort of teetering back and forth at the mercy of this out of control man. When I remembered that and thought about that, God, of course that has, you know, repercussions and reverberates through your life on your sense of sort of safety in the world.
In your essay, you write, "Forgetting turned out to be impossible, so eventually I chose to remember instead. Having gone on this journey of healing and understanding, what would you say to other young women, or girls even, who might be experiencing abuse?"
I would say, it's not your fault. It happens to a lot of people. It may feel really bad right now, but it's going to be okay. You don't have to continue on in relationships like this. You can learn to have a healthy relationship. You can learn what a healthy relationship is. And moving forward, your life will not be defined by this.
That's author Sarah Kaysbeer, whose book is A Woman, A Plan, An Outline of a Man. She spoke with Sarah Nardi. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. As a public radio fan, you already know there's no subscription fee to listen to or read our stories. Everyone can access this essential public service thanks to community support. It's the Fall Fund Drive, and we're asking everyone to help pay for this essential service with a gift in any amount at wcbu.org or wglt.org. Keep us on the beat and keep the news coming. Chip in whatever you can afford with a contribution now at WGLT.org. Republican Congressman Rodney Davis met Democratic challenger Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan for the second debate of their high-profile rematch last night in Normal. Ryan Denham has a recap.
Londrigan tried repeatedly to link Davis to President Trump's track record on the pandemic, tax reform, and incivility in politics. They met in a mostly empty auditorium at ISU in a socially distanced 13-district debate hosted by WGLT. Londrigan repeatedly noted that Davis is an honorary co-chair of Trump's re-election campaign. Trump won the 13th district by 5 percentage points last time around. Londrigan criticized Trump's response to the pandemic.
Think about what it would have been like if we would have had a president who stood in front of us and told us the truth, had a plan, worked with Congress to make sure that we were moving forward, and instead we had somebody stand up there, lie to us, and people like Congressman Davis bury their heads in the sand.
Davis repeatedly invoked the name of Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. He says that Pelosi is the real reason that lawmakers and Trump have not agreed on another round of coronavirus relief.
Remember, it was less than a year ago that COVID-19 was discovered here on Earth, and we are doing a great job in making sure that we address the testing issues compared to where America was. And it is in record time that we are allowing that testing to ramp up. We need to do more. We have learned a lot, and there were bipartisan failures in addressing what a national stockpile should look like.
Responding to a question about economic inequality, Londrigan said those disparities were exacerbated by the 2017 tax cuts championed by Davis. More than 60% of the tax savings went to people in the top 20% of the income ladder. That's according to the nonpartisan Tax Policy Center. Londrigan again summoned Trump's name and his $750 personal income tax bill.
As we found out, President Trump wrote off $70,000 in hairstyling. Teachers can only write off $250 in school supplies.
Davis said the 2017 tax cuts helped revitalize the economy, pointing to what he called a period of historic economic growth and low unemployment. That was before COVID hit.
I don't believe that this country can leave anybody behind if we actually put good policies in place to fight poverty and to address the issue and get people into those good paying jobs that were just here right before the pandemic began.
Lundgren says Davis has not done enough to hold Trump accountable. She referred to a 538 ranking of how members of Congress have voted in relationship to Trump's position.
He talks bipartisanship, but he votes with this president 91% of the time.
Davis again cited his rank on the list of the most bipartisan members of Congress at number 13. That's according to the Lugar Center's Bipartisan Index. He says Lundgren should condemn the vitriol coming from Pelosi, including recently calling Republicans enemies of the state.
If you don't believe that that type of rhetoric led a deranged gunman to want to take out his political grievances on me and my friends, then you are more partisan than I ever thought. And that was a pretty heavy lift.
That's a reference to the 2017 shooting at a congressional baseball practice. Davis Lundgren in 2018 was one of the tightest races in the country. Davis won by just 2,000 votes. The rematch comes during a presidential election year with higher turnout expected. Davis and Lundgren are both raising and spending large amounts of money in what's become one of the most closely watched races in the U.S. The Cook Political Report says the race is leaning Republican. The publication Roll Call also shows the race tilting Republican. The 13th District includes parts of 14 counties in central and southern Illinois, including parts of Bloomington Normal. I'm Ryan Denham.
You can watch our full video of the debate at WGLT.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker.